Hello and welcome to Ashes of the Imperium, a 40k podcast from sunny England. My name is Dan.
And I'm Steve.
Join us as we explore the 41st millennium in all its glory, as we talk narrative gaming, Warhammer lore, and awesome hobby. From the grim dark corners of Imperial hives,
to the outer reaches of Xenos-infested space.
Welcome to the Ashes of the Imperium.
Hello and welcome to Ashes of the Imperium. My name is Dan, and once again, I'm joined by the wonderful Steve. How are you, Steve?
I'm very good, mate. Very good. Exciting times.
Welcome back to all our listeners.
Yes, we're back.
And welcome back to you, Steve.
Yes. Yep. It's good to be back. Lots of exciting things to share at the minute.
Absolutely. So for those of you who have just tuned in, we are a monthly-ish, fortnightly-ish Warhammer 40k podcast that focuses on narrative 40k. But we also dip our little toes into 40k adjacent things as well. And we have taken a little bit of a break. So for our listeners who are rejoining us, thank you for your patience. Steve and I had a little chat about how things were going in my life, sort of things at home, things at work, and all that jazz. And without going into the gory details, we decided to take a bit of a pause on the podcast to give, I suppose, both of us, but mostly myself, some space to sort some stuff out. Stuff is as sorted as it is going to be. So we are now back on the airwaves talking about this wonderful game of Warhammer that we both, and hopefully you all, love. So you will find us on all the various places, you know, iTunes, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and potentially soon things like TikTok and YouTube as we start to get back into the swing of things. But without further ado, we will crack on with the rest of the episode. And given that we are a narrative podcast, we thought our kind of welcome back episode, if you will, should be focused on a narrative event. So we've got some interviews coming up with other narrative TOs. We've got some other cool content where we're going to be talking all about future releases and current releases as they come. So I've got a whole bunch of Astra Militarum reveals and leaks to kind of go through and talk about, including a lovely new tank that has just arrived today. I probably shouldn't say that because that dates it. Just shows, you know, when I release this in 3 months' time, people are like, what? That's been out for ages. But yeah, so we will be doing that in due course. But until now, Steve, what are we talking about today?
We're talking about Rising Tomb Part 1.
Rising Tomb.
Yes.
So, Steve, what was, slash is, slash could be, the tomb that is rising?
So it's a 40k narrative event hosted and run by the good folks at Warhammer World, Steve Wren and his team. I think it was the second one they ran. I missed the first one. But I think...
And what was this one called, Part 1?
This is Rising Tomb Part 1. So Part 2, which is in January, I think, but that's sold out within moments.
It did. It did. It did, he says frustratingly. Yes, I tried to secure tickets to that. That was a sad time. So I feel like I'm getting tickets to Justin Bieber at Wembley or something. I didn't realize that it was going to... I was like sat there having a beer, you know, around my parents' house, having a little chat. I was like, oh, those tickets are going on sale. I better be quick. And they were like, God, they're not going to sell out, are they? And I was like, well, you know, pays to be careful and diligent, doesn't it? There I am, like refreshing at, you know, 5 seconds past, and the site crashes and they're all gone.
Yeah.
So it just goes to show how popular these events are, doesn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, and for me personally, it's frustrating. You know, I'm sorry for you, but the fact that sellout hopefully means we'll see more of them from
Fingers Games crossed. Workshop and because, other, sorry, and I did interrupt. You said this was the second, and I was being facetious to be like, oh, but it's part one. How could it be the second? Was there one before? That was the question. Was
oh, yes. Before? Sorry. So, yes, there was very much based around gene stealer cult infections between the teams and stuff. So I think it was as equally fun to go to. I couldn't make that one, unfortunately. But I think what it's really allowed them to do is when we came to do this one, you could really see the team had kind of got their legs and would just ran with it. And I think I want to just right from the beginning, I want to go through some of the detail, and I don't want anyone to feel that. So let's be honest, the game as it stands right now is complicated. There's lots of books, there's lots of expansions, there's lots of White Dwarf expansions, And for many people, it's become a little bit unwieldy. And what I'm going to talk about is actually more stratagems that were specialist for that weekend. And there's layers to what went on. What I'd like to say is the way it was delivered and the way it was ran, it didn't feel like it was extra weight. It just felt like the ability to fine-tune what you were doing. And it felt like we were doing something more than just playing five missions. So
40K, which is, you know, at the moment, an incredibly complex and involved game with all the, you know, various things that go on, you know, stratagems and et cetera, warlord traits and all those layers. You're saying that despite there being additional ones of those, which are, let's be honest, some of the things that people kind of call out as the bloat in the game, perhaps, you know, all yep. these various different things that you've got to keep track of. You're saying despite there being additional, in inverted commas, bloat, it was still workable and just as fun as kind of as you might have expected.
Yeah. Yeah. And so I think right from the kickoff, it was a crusade event. So this is the narrative system for 40K. It was a crusade event. And I think that helped in that we were asked to bring 75 power level roster, but we were only ever going to play 50 power level games.
I do like events like that. I do like the kind of the roster style, sideboard style of events. It reminds me of Age of Sigmar back in the kind of, I don't know, the good old days or the bad old days at this stage, yeah. but back in the Wild West of Age of Sigmar before Games Workshop released the General's Handbook, the independent tournament scene kind of ran with this system where you would bring the equivalent of 150 power level to an event and only ever play with 100 of it.
Yeah.
I mean, I say I like that. I like the concept of that. When I finish painting my, you know, 103rd power level, and I'm like, 47 more to go. No, I'll just run the same list. Don't worry. You know, just throw that stuff away. Don't need that. It does annoy me. But apart from that, I like the concept, the flexibility. And also, sometimes it's nice. You want to build an army. You're like, cool, 100 power level. Here's my army. Looks really cool. If only I could have like a couple of extra things of that, or a couple of extra sentinels, or maybe a land speeder, a couple of land speeders instead of a tank, you know, something like that. Whereas this does give you the way to do that without having to create a whole new army, a whole new 1,000 power level army.
Yes. Yeah, 100%. And I think the one thing to be super clear on is that although we had a sense of the what the event was about, and I'll read that little blurb in a minute because we can get a sense of it, we had no idea of what our missions were going to be. So you couldn't necessarily, bespoke your lists to make sure you were going to win, if that makes sense. So having those extra 25 power level meant you could have a defensive list and an attack list. You could have so, but even so, 50 power level isn't loads. So that it meant your games were a bit quicker. But that doesn't mean you were sat around doing think. You know, there was the command phase at the beginning, there was the team phase that involved stuff, then there was the, when you finished a game, you went through your crusade aftermath with the player who you just played with, and you went through all of that. So there was always stuff to be doing and going on with. So it felt like a full weekend. So shall I cloth with a little bit of story?
Yes. What was the narrative of the event, Steve? Was there a tomb that was rising?
There was lots of tombs. There was lots of things rising, but they all needed finding. So this is what we had as the background. He said, humanity and countless other races have encountered Necron tomb worlds throughout the vast breadth of the galaxy. Actively hunting out those who have abode their enemy have discovered more than a handful. Hidden for millions of years, their buried tombs have often been built upon ignorant younger races. Techno-archaeologists, keyword for the weekend.
My favourite type of archaeologist.
Yes. Even posit that some Necron crypts, catacombs, and entire tombs have been newly phased into place beneath Imperial cities, claiming to have previously detected nothing but solid rock beneath them before the tomb's shocking emergence. When buried tomb complexes begin to flicker back to mechanical life, woe betide any metropolis built above it. Long before the tomb's skeletal necrons are awakened, ancient protocols rouse canoptic constructs to purge the region of biological life and effect repairs. The tomb's structure reverberates and reforms, spars of living metal thrusting through bedrock, foundations and city districts alike, as the tomb reasserts itself over the hab blocks, industrial quarters and defense placements.
To paraphrase Scooby-Doo, ruh-oh.
Exactly.
This sounds exactly. bad. This sounds exactly. very bad.
Exactly. So that's what we kind of knew we were going to be facing. So there was no stipulation as to what race you needed to be, or there was no requirement to have equal Necron, equal alien, equal Imperium or anything like that. You literally rocked up on Saturday morning and then put into four teams. So I think for me, I like that in that I wasn't forced to bring anything other than what I wanted to bring. And there was no pressure to do any choices in the weekend other than listen to our team commanders. So we had four team commanders, obviously one per team, and they were GW staffers. And they were the ones that kind of gave us a briefing, gave us the news of the fallout of each game, and just kept us all on track and up to date. And I think they were really important and they made it fun. And I think what that meant was any event like this, you have a mixture of people, some of which, you know, want to give some cheek to the commanders, want to say they're going to do better. And some people just want to sort of stand back a bit and just be kind of part of the team and be quiet. And I think that worked really well. Some people, you know, had a great weekend, but didn't necessarily have to be up front. And those that did, there was a mechanic in place where the commanders could kind of make them a champion and give them a special mission, which gave the whole team a reward. So if you want to take on that pressure, then you could, and you got this special mission. And if you won it, then you improved the team's movement for that map phase. So I think that worked really well. So the principle of what we were all looking to do is we were starting with a grid map that was 5x4. And we each was starting in a different sector. And based on how well our teams, our players did, as in wins, that gave us movement on the map and allowed us to move and explore. If our champions, did well, that gave us extra movement. And then what happened was, due to the super large display screen that obviously Warhammer World has, at the end of each game, that displayed where everyone had gone and what they'd revealed. So each team did their move, they revealed something in that square. It was the same for everybody. We all got to see what was in the squares. And the squares had a whole bunch of things. So as basically we were looking through this city site, trying to find the vaults. The vaults, which is where the good stuff was. And as techno-archaeologists, we were obviously looking to get in the vaults. But if you found a vault, you had to find a key, and you had to find the matching key, and that was in a different location. You could also find a reactor, and that reactor could either be leaking or broken, and anyone in surrounding squares got affected by that. So once enough of the map had been revealed, you could say, okay, we want to go down one to pick up the key, and then we need to go back one and then left one to go back to the vault that we found, which we didn't have the key. So it was this kind of map phase. So I've not even got to the games yet, but this sounds,
I'm so glad you started with, oh, just so you know, there was loads of complexity in it, but it wasn't overwhelming, because I'm already feeling a bit like, what on earth is going on, Steve? There's a map phase, there's a what phase?
So let's, I should have said this probably at the beginning, but anyone that's got a White Dwarf issue 480, all of the rules are actually in there. The whole campaign is in there. So you can play it at home. So if you like the idea of it, but you can't make head and tail of my ramblings, go there. The whole campaign's in there. So it's, there's some finesses because of the event, but
And so for listeners without a colour television, White Dwarf 480 is the one with the kind of navy breacher slash war cry kind of Nurgle swamp dude on the front.
Yes. Yes, exactly. Exactly.
I mean, that's a pretty cool kill team, isn't it?
Yes.
Like, I'm not sure it's Imperium approved, but...
No, but the breachers are going to get those contagion points and they're going to be in trouble.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, yeah.
Especially the ones without their helmets on.
You wouldn't want to meet those two down the dark alley, would you?
No, exactly. Ultimately, the whole event is about finding the vaults, unearthing the vaults. And I think for me, what does it actually mean for me as a player? Well, when it came to choose where we moved on the map, the commander asked the team that, again, those with an opinion, which out, those that didn't. Sometimes there was a discussion. Sometimes somebody suggested everything and everyone, yep, that's fine. So you kind of felt like involved. It was just the commander saying, you have to do this, you have to do that. And I think for me, what that meant was, is that we were all trying to, because opening a vault then gave you the ability to improve one of your units. And actually, this was probably the coolest thing that, and you gave you a real flavor of Crusade, is that as you were playing, you were obviously upgrading your vehicles, you were upgrading your troops, and to have another upgrade as well. And it meant that by the time you got to the last two games, you'd sit across from somebody and they'd say, well, this is this. And you go, yep, no, I know what that does. And you go, ah, yeah, but it's also got targeters, which is plus one. It's got this and it's got that. And you kind of go, oh, no, I don't want to fight that. Oh, no. And I think for me, that was fun to face, and that you were having to tactically deal with something you weren't getting. But also it meant that you suddenly had things like, my tank with its massive Gatling guns was suddenly doing damage too.
Oh, which was cheeky.
Which was cheeky, yes. And again, you tell people that and they go, oh, actually, hang on a minute. So that's, you move under half and that's 40 shots. So I think that's where you were shaping your army as you played the stories.
So Steve, one of my favorite things about campaign games is, or campaigning, is the ability to upgrade your units modeling wise as you go on. And listeners of the podcast will remember me going on and banging on about Mordheim, how I used to change the models as they would get armored differently or armed differently. Was that something that you did in your game or your weekend? Did you kind of change your models somehow?
One thing I did is I did kind of make some changes to my models for it. But I didn't because I didn't necessarily know who was going to particularly get upgraded, especially, I didn't necessarily do that. And in retrospect, I kind of wished I had, in a way. One of the things I did was I brought along the Inquisitor, who is a massive fan of Necron tech. And her role was obviously brought specifically to break into the vaults and grab the technology. And along those lines, what I suggested was that as she was supporting my Talan force, and those that don't know is that that's my main K army, I've got Astra Militarum. So what I did is I took the Dremel to the base of my tanks so that I could get inside to put some magnets, and I magnetized some black stone armor paneling that would get added to them during the game, in the fact that they were now, obviously, using Xenos technology is a big no-no, but my Inquisitor was going to allow that, and I think for me that allowed me to have a little bit of flavor that was bespoke to the event. It means I can use those vehicles down the club now, and people are going to go, why has that got that hanging off it?
And it adds to the story, doesn't it? That's the best. That's the most enjoyable bit about all these narrative gaming stuff, is especially when you've used like a kill team. Like in my old Sons of Medusa army, I used my kill team as part of my broader 100-pound level army, 2,000 point as it was, because it's part of the competitive army. And there was just these kind of five intercessors that were just slightly different. They had like kind of these Auspex kind of scanners on their backpacks, and you know, one of them had like a kind of weird converted rifle. And you know, I made it clear to everyone that they were just normal intercessors in competitive games, but they were my kill team. They were the first five models that I made.
Yeah, yeah, and I think for me, it makes your army unique. It makes it fun to play when it's just it makes them different for a reason, for a gaming reason, for a narrative reason, rather than it just being making a load of stuff up. No, the whole game's about making stuff up. I understand that, but I think for me, taking this event, and I think we've mentioned this on the show a long time ago, is the fact that, you know, you can get through they play unique buffs and unique battle scars, not all of which are all bad. And I think for me to be able to carry those through, and for someone to say, well, why have you got that? And you say, well, I played this flashpoint with my mates for 2 weeks, and this is what we ended up with, and this is why I've left that planet or left that flashpoint, that system, and we're now playing here. I just think you start writing your own novel in a way for your forces.
I think that's one of the things that also might put people off as well, like hearing all these kind of like the, I suppose, like the lengths that you went to in order to kind of take part in this narrative game. If you were, say, like slightly more casually interested in narrative, would you say it was the right space for them to kind of explore their burgeoning narrative interest?
So I played five games, and I would suggest that at least two people came along to the event with their favorite army, which isn't competitive. So they normally play match play. They never play this army anymore because it's not competitive for them in the sphere that they play, but they wanted to come along and just play their favorite army again. And that's exactly what it would fine for. It was absolutely good for them. So yes, you know, you don't need to make the outfit. You don't need to customize your models. They literally bought their models, that their favorite models, turned up and joined with the story. I think it's a great way to get either another way to play the game and maybe refresh or reinvigorate what you're doing, or to put your toe in the water, because 50 power level isn't actually too many points, is it?
No, it's not. You know, we do our little 25 power level things when we review the codexes, so it quickly disappears.
Yes. And I think the fact that, so one of the cool things is when you arrived, you obviously got your lanyard to say you're official and all that. But you actually got an A5 D-ring binder that had core rules in it. It had the theatres of war. So there was bespoke theatres for war. But what that meant was that when it became the start of a new game, the team had then handed out your mission. So, you know, you didn't even have all that right at the beginning. You just literally had it as you went, and you kind of had to go, oh, blimey, right, okay, what are we doing now? And then you, again, it came with a bit of flavor, and the objectives changed, and the objectives were obviously aligned with what's going on. So I think for me, again, you didn't need to necessarily have to spend a long time reading a massive pack or reading hundreds of pages of background information, which, you know, some events like to give a lot of background information, and some of that's important to winning or losing. But again, this one, you could either dive in deep and still turn up with 50 power level, or like I said, people just went, I played one guy, had a really great game. He just went, I wanted to fill a Chaos Land Raider with Zerkas and run at people. And he certainly did.
I mean, that sounds like an ideal, a very admirable aspiration, rather.
but he came not knowing if he was supposed to be holding four objectives or there's going to be six objectives with jumping. He just said, I'm just going to come at you. I mean, he did have some Chaos Marines and a Lord and some heavy weapons guys, Blitzrayers.
Havocs, those kind of Devastators type equivalent.
Yeah, Havocs. So he had a group of those. So he had a little bit of a mix, but it was a scary moment of this thing barreling across the table, and literally it was like, take it down. We've got to take it down. And we literally did. But they still bundled out with half my army when they hit me. But so I think I'd just like to talk that game through, because I had five great games. So that, you know,
five great games. Of course you did.
Yeah. And I think you know, I'd say probably one was a little bit quieter and serious, but it was still fair, and we had a good time. And talking about games then, so there was one kind of thing that for me personally, and this goes back to the state of 40K a little bit, in that I took guard, and the rules about the improvements for guard, like the armor improvements and Hammer of the Emperor, they live in a document that's for match play. Now, I was only going to take this army because it's the only one that I've got to the level I'm happy to take. I did speak to the team, and they said, this is a narrative event, so those rules wouldn't be in place. And I went, fine, I understand that. That's cool. However, when we turned up, they kind of said, well, you decide with the other player whether you want to include that or not.
So this is, if you're playing in an event, I think it's up to the TOs to say, like, either yes or no. It's got to be, because otherwise, like, you want to play with the event, with the rules, rather, clearly, because they make the army better. They be, like, we acknowledge that in a match play environment, these units are weak, so they need a buff. Now, just because you're not playing in a match play environment doesn't make those units suddenly less weak and less requiring buffs. It just means that the mindset of the players playing them is perhaps less focused on that balance. But, like, as someone that used to take, like, really underpowered Age of Sigmar armies to competitive events, it's, even if you're just having lousy fun with a stupid army, like, five games in, you know, by lunchtime on Sunday, you're just like, oh, can my units just be do something, please? So I find that a bit unfair for the TOs to say, no, we're not using it, but when you arrive, oh yeah, it's up to your opponent, because that puts that then puts, like, almost a burden on you to have to not make your opponent agree, but have to sort of raise it with your opponent.
Yeah, I did have to raise it, and I basically said just what I said to you. I said I'm not necessarily expecting to do it, but, you know, and again, you've got things like the 40 shot cannon on the Lehman Russ. No one really wants to face Hammer of the Emperor on that, because there's a lot of sixes coming at you. So I just said, you know, you decide. And most people decided that we weren't playing with those rules. So
yeah, did most people, did you say five games, was it?
Yeah.
Five games. Out of five, how many people let you use the stronger rules or agreed to use the stronger rules?
One game. Yeah.
Like, I think that's nonsense. Like, clearly the army needs, and how many of your games did you win?
I lost four and drew one.
Which one did you win?
I lost four and I drew one.
Which one did you draw?
Against the player with the Land Raider full of berserkers.
Okay. Was that out of interest, was that one game you drew the one where you were allowed to play with your stronger rules?
Yes.
Oh, I mean, well, I didn't. Okay, so as I was asking these questions in the back of my mind, I was like, I didn't ask Steve this before we went. I'm going to edit the heck out of this if he doesn't agree with my point. But my point is validated. Like, there you go. Like, the army is notoriously underpowered at the moment in its current format. And guys, sorry to, like, I've completely, like, detracked this away from being a narrative event review, more about, like, the roles and responsibilities of tournament organizers. But I think that's important. If you're going to run an event, regardless of whether it's competitive or narrative, I think it's the burden should be on the TOs to facilitate the games and not put the burden on players to have those conversations.
Yeah, I think that's my point. That's what I'd like to suggest. So I think, did my poor performance impact the team? I didn't feel like I dragged the whole team down. I did impact it, but there was never a sheet went up. There was never a score that went up that said, Steve's the most hopeless in our team. He's the one dragging us down. That was never there. It was literally, well done, team. We've done really well. We can move three squares, or we're now this, or we're now that. So in many ways, I think it's difficult, Dan, because ultimately you can dress up these events with great stories and unique Flashpoint Theatres of War. We've got ongoing leaks from nuclear reactors. We still sit down and play 50 powerful games in front of Hitler. There's still the same armies out of the book playing the game, trying to grab objectives or destroy things. And so, yes, it does have an impact. It does have an impact as weather. But again, ultimately, how the game is kind of balanced and looked after, I don't know. Maybe there some of these things need to be tagged as being, these are universal balancing rules.
Yeah, I just don't get how why you, like, if you're going to say a unit needs balancing, surely it needs balancing across the game.
Because I'm playing units that haven't chosen to be balanced in the game, and we're still using 50 power level. So
yeah.
Anyway. So I think ultimately the missions were all good fun. They all felt themed to the event. None of them felt unachievable in any way. I think for me, would I recommend going to one of these at Warhammer World? Absolutely. Do you have to go full native? You can.
Did you go, let me guess, okay, Steve, if I know the answer to this, you did go in fancy dress, didn't you?
I'd like to use the term cosplay rather than fancy dress. That doesn't mean I'm showing any midriff. Well, not intentionally, yeah. Anyway. So one of the challenges with playing Ash Militarum is the rules at Warhammer World is you can't be wearing any real-world military uniforms for all the right reasons. So the choices are, if you want to go proper Astra Militarum, you've then got to start making all your own armor and all that stuff. So that was a kind of bit of a change I didn't really have time for. So I kind of went as a archaeologist. So I made EVA.
Are we talking like, you know, Indiana Jones, Dr. Alan, yes, Grant?
Kind of more Indiana Jones.
Evie from The Mummy, Evie O'Connell.
Oh, I wish. No. I had the kind of indie style hat. I had the kind of satchel, which kept my dice in, which was great, and my tape measure. And then I had some tools, which I made out of EVA foam. So kind of had a little trowel. And some boots and some shorts. So kind of cosplay light, if you like. But again, you know, there was another player that had some stuff and other people. So it wasn't required, but it just kind of made it fun, I think. And I think that's the thing. It was, again, the scope's there to do as much or as little as you want. And I think that's kind of sign of a good narrative event, that it's not exclusive and elite. I think it would be kind of a really shame if it ever got to be that level.
Yeah, in what sense?
Oh, that, you know, you have to be in cosplay, you have to bring army that's been at least two other events, you know, all that kind of stuff.
Oh, what, like, you can't go to part two if you haven't been to part one type thing?
Yeah. So I think all of that sort of stuff is... I mean, if it's you just inviting a couple of mates, then that's very different. But whether it's a Warhammer World or a independent event, you know, we want more people playing narrative.
Oh yeah, I don't think that's the kind of thing. Certainly not the kind of thing Warhammer World would do. I think if you're hosting your own private event, and you know it's a narrative campaign over a series of weekends, then you know you can do you. I think that sounds really cool. But like an event at Warhammer World is never gonna be exclusive like that. I think that's Then now I'm thinking, oh, that does sound really cool actually, to have like you buy a season ticket, let's say for the year.
Yeah.
And you then attend like one game a quarter.
Yeah.
Or something like that. Like one weekend a quarter, or maybe like, you know, 4 day long events.
Yeah.
What you could do is you could have like a weekend a quarter, and you only need to attend one of the days. So you're kind of putting on like eight events. Because obviously people have got, you know, stuff on, real life in the way, as discussed earlier. Real life does get in the way of Warhammer occasionally, which is frustrating. But yeah, and then you could like say like, oh, cool, you're this ticket buys you access into 4 days worth of events, and you sign up to which ones are available. or you sign up to the ones that you're available for. Yeah. And then over the course of the year, you get to attend four of the events. You know, maybe you could do like, you know, one game in quarter one, you skip, you know, you can't do a game in quarter two. So you'd play two games in quarter three and then, yeah, you know, another one in quarter four. That's the kind of cool thing that you could do that would be like exclusive. And there's like a ticketed campaign event throughout the year. I mean, that's a hell of an undertaking. I mean, like, I struggle to get the, you know, three other people on Discord for a D&D campaign every week. So
yeah,
I can't imagine playing like a 10 to 20 player narrative event.
Yeah, but I think the thing is once you kind of get that thing kicked off, it is like DMing, and that actually things will happen in the first couple of them. That means actually what you do in event three, event four, kind of writes itself. Do you know what I mean? That like there'd be a colossal failure by one side, so that means, well, we can't, you know, it doesn't have to be fixed. It can be flexible. So no one knows. And I think the fact that, you know, you've done terrible one and two, but suddenly an epic thing allows you to get back for turn to game three. So season three, and then season four is everything to play for. And I think, I mean, that's something talking to my wife, and she basically says, Steve, you just keep trying to turn Warhammer into a role play game. She's not entirely wrong.
She's not wrong, is she?
No. But I think there is some overlap with the right group at the right place at the right time. That, because I think there's absolutely, and I've played it with my mates, where you play a hopeless game where you're massively outnumbered. It's not fair, but it's literally, how long can I hold up your fuss? Because what you get off the table determines what you have in the next game. So it's not a matter of you just going, well, I'll throw everything at you and I might lose more than you, but I'll win the game. No, that's not how it works. It's literally, so it's those kind of games, but they're really hard to convince somebody that that's a good idea. It's like, turn up to this event and leave half your army in the box for a game because you're not allowed to use it. Be like, really? And that kind of breaks a lot of the usual way you play.
Yeah.
So again, that has to be kind of closed group mates things, but maybe one day. Done.
Well, thanks for the run through that, Steve. That's that sounds really interesting. Now, at this point, I would usually, you know, point people towards a link or, you know, say like, oh yeah, and I'm going to part two, so I'll see you all there. But unfortunately, part two is sold out, and I didn't manage to get a ticket. Frustratingly, neither of us did. So if you are going, let us know. We'd love to hear from you. We'd love to hear whether you went to the first one. You know, if you also attended.
Yeah.
What was it like? What were your thoughts? What was your favorite bit? What do you think could be done differently next time? And what do you hope they put into part two? And if you are going to part two and you haven't been to part one, then hopefully this podcast was interesting. But also let us know what you're hoping to get from the weekend. And most importantly, what army you're taking. You can get hold of us on at AOTI40K on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, and YouTube. And the video content is yet to arrive, but you can always drop us a follow and prepare for the drop, as it were. But you can also email us on ashesoftheimperium@gmail.com. And of course, you can find our podcast on all the usual places, but anchor.fm/AOTI40K is where we are. And you can use that podcast website address to send us a voice note as well. We'd love to hear from you. Until next time, keep calm and crusade on.
Cheers, guys.